Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Somerville Hospital is promising to make changes after 34-year-old Laura Levis died outside the doors of the hospital emergency room 2 years ago. Laura's husband, Peter DeMarco, wrote about her death in a recent Boston Globe piece titled Losing Laura. In that piece, he outlined the failures that led to Laura collapsing after she had an asthma attack and, despite calling 911, first responders couldn't find her on a bench in front of the hospital. Earlier today, DeMarco met with Patrick Wardell, the CEO of Cambridge Health Alliance, which owned Somerville Hospital. It was his first meeting with hospital administrators since his wife's death. He joined us shortly after that meeting to tell us what they talked about.
The big picture is that the entire emergency response system failed her from the moment she dialed 911 on her cell phone and it pinged in the wrong location. I was not with Laura that morning. I wish I was. She had her asthma attack about 4 a.m. She was only a few blocks from the Somerville Hospital at that time, and she decided to walk there. She walked up the hill. She saw the front of the hospital, and there were two entrances, one on the left, one on the right, and she had to pick one to go into. There were no signs to tell her which door was the emergency room. And she chose to go to the doorway that was more brightly lighted, the doorway that was outside the emergency room. She could see the emergency room from through the windows, and that door was locked. She collapsed on a bench 29 feet from the door of the hospital. She called 911 before she collapsed. She told them she was there. She told them she was having an asthma attack. She said she was at the emergency room at Somerville Hospital and she could not get in. She told them everything she needed for her life to be saved, and it wasn't. And she died outside the doors of the hospital.
One of the failures here, Peter, that you talked about was just the emergency call system itself. Apparently, when Laura did call 911, her call was sent to a regional dispatch center, who then called Somerville Police, and the police then called the hospital to try to figure out what was going on because she said she was outside the Somerville Hospital ER. Let's listen to a bit of that tape.
Emergency?
Hi, it's Somerville Police.
Hi.
Hi, are your doors locked by any chance?
No.
Because there's a female having an asthma attack. She's pinging off Power Street, and she's saying the emergency room is closed, so I don't know where she is.
I'll go look.
So Peter DeMarco, someone did go look, but also just the fact that there seemed to be this confusion here. What do you think that issue brings up for you in terms of the emergency response system?
Laura's call did not go directly to the local police department, the Somerville Police Department, who they originally would have known right off the bat the layout of the hospital. Instead, Laura's call went to a state police regional 911 center, and that operator apparently did not know anything about the Somerville Hospital. It's tragic in so many ways, but it's tragic because Laura had 41 seconds of breath left, and she used all of that to tell that first operator where she was and to explain her entire emergency to that first operator. But that regional operator was essentially a middleman who could not dispatch help. And when that regional operator connected Laura to the local police, Laura was asked to explain all over again what her emergency was as if she had never even called. She couldn't speak by then. For reasons which I may never understand, the person who got that call, the charge nurse that night, just took one or two steps outside the door, but she did not go to look for Laura between those two entrances, just that 100-foot span. She did not walk those 100 feet, and Laura was right there. The communication errors continued with the fire department. They were as well, given incomplete information. They were not actually told where Laura's cell phone pinged, even though that pinged inaccurately, they still were not given a starting point for that. Based on the information they had, they went to the wrong door of the hospital to find her.
But eventually, really, it was the fire department who found Laura and who had to, and the police, and they had to notify the hospital that they were right outside the door.
Yes, the fire department failing to find her at that other door, which was at the bottom of the hill where Somerville is. A firefighter named David Farino walked up the hill into the emergency room, and he saw Laura, and he went running to her, and he ripped apart her sweatshirt and began CPR. He was able to restart her heart, and Laura was brought into the emergency room. And as I report in the story, as it was 15 minutes after she called 911 from outside the door, and it was too late.
And then she actually left Somerville Hospital and went to Cambridge Hospital and was in the ICU for about a week. Is that right?
For a week, exactly. Yes. I spent a week with her, our whole families, by her bedside, hoping that she would recover.
So you met with the hospital owner today. They had apologized after your original story. And you now feel as if they've taken responsibility for what happened. Why is that?
We went point by point about all of the safety precautions that were not followed, about the protocols that were lacking, the fail-safes that failed. We went point by point about errors made by the hospital in not having proper signage above an emergency room door. We went through errors, individual errors made by staff members, by this nurse who did not, who barely looked for Laura outside, by security staff who also did not try to find her. And I can honestly say that at every point we went through. There was a contrition on part of the hospital and accountability, and there was an admission that, yeah, they failed.
And they did make changes. They did improve signage. They did improve staffing and lighting and things like that, they say. And apparently there have been improvements made to first responders' technology as well. But I wonder, do you think today's meeting would have happened if you hadn't written that story in the Boston Globe?
I'm not really sure it would have. It certainly didn't happen after Laura died. It didn't happen after weeks went by. And I wrote a letter to the New York Times thanking the doctors and nurses who tried to save Laura's life. That letter went viral, and there was no mention of the hospital even telling me the truth at that point. It certainly didn't happen over the last month, where I repeatedly reached out to the hospital officials, to their top officials, to explain to me what happened to Laura as I was writing this story for the Globe, and they refused to comment to me the entire way. I will say, Deborah, the one comment I did tell them at the end of the meeting, because I did thank them for coming today, I told them, better late than never.
Are you satisfied right now? That you, at least from their response, are you satisfied that the hospital has learned from this and this attention has brought about what you had hoped it would bring about?
It was so important that they came today to the Globe to answer my questions.
You did look into suing the hospital. And initially, the hospital was saying it wasn't commenting because of potential litigation. What's happening with that?
Massachusetts has a cap. It's called a public malpractice cap. It limits any award, any verdict against a public hospital to $100,000 or less. And in short, there's no way around that cap. And it basically, it you can sue the hospital for $100,000. My lawyers said that amount of money you may spend more in lawyer's fees or court costs than you'd ever receive in a capped verdict. So you actually lose money suing the hospital. The federal government brought a charge. They alleged that several hospitals violated the country's primary law regarding emergency room access to patients. And they reached a settlement agreement with Somerville Hospital, with Cambridge Health Alliance, Somerville's owner. That settlement agreement was for $90,000, but that agreement included no admission of wrongdoing. The Department of Public Health, yes, and I thank them in the story, they conducted a full investigation. They produced a report that uncovered many of the details that I have just told you. You know, and I have to be honest, I am not sure if this is an issue that the Department of Public Health doesn't have enough teeth, so to speak, from a regulatory stance, to go further than they did.
What about this Nurse X, who you write a lot about, that the nurse that you haven't identified that appeared to go out and look for Laura on that September night in 2016 and only spent about 10 seconds and then walked right back in again? Any word from the hospital? I mean, does she face any sort of punitive action because of that?
Yeah, I asked whether anyone had faced either a suspension or had been reprimanded or even fired. And the answer was no.
Now what do you do? How do you want Laura to be remembered? And what thought would you leave our listeners with about Laura? Can you just give us a little info about who she was and how you hope she's remembered?
Sure. So, I brought a picture of her to the meeting today. I put it on the desk as we all sat around the table because she needed to be there too. She has been with me every step of this way, I feel. She was an amazing woman. She was strong. She was smart. She was funny. She was beautiful. In the future, I certainly hope that part of her legacy will be saving other people. She was an organ donor. She's already done that. I hope that people that learn from her death and that leads to some good. And I also hope that people learn from her life, because she was someone who loved life. She was a doer. She was excited about life. She loved every minute of it. And she was... as going forward, I am now in the process of starting a foundation in her name. And it's called the Lift for Laura Foundation. And it's Lift and then the number 4 and then Laura. Liftforlaura.org. And the purpose of that will be to share Laura's passion for fitness with women, and even more importantly, to raise money to pay for personal gym training sessions for abused women and underprivileged women, so that they can feel empowered physically and hopefully also emotionally in their lives. I can think of nothing that Laura would have loved more than this cause. So, yes, I hope people remember her for the... Sorry, this is hard.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I hope people remember her for who she was, for this vibrant, young, healthy woman who was going places and got the most out of every minute of her life, and that her memory will certainly overshadow any of the scenes of her in the last moments of her life outside this hospital. I hope that's what people remember her about her the most.
Peter DeMarco. Peter, I just want to thank you for sharing something so deeply personal and deeply emotional with us today. And again, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. And It's been quite a day. Thank you.
Peter DeMarco's full story titled Losing Laura was published in the Boston Globe, and you can find a link to it at our website, wbur.org. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Deborah Becker. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.